A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's moving to a new apartment, purging the cable graveyard, and he wants to know the real deal on buying bulk Ethernet by the reel and crimping his own runs. The core question is simple. Where do you actually buy this stuff? What sizes do the spools come in? And how does the economics shake out versus pre-made cables? He also wants to know whether this works for fiber. And the short answer is no, but we're going to unpack exactly why. Honestly, Herman, the timing on this is perfect because I just excavated my own cable drawer and found a 50-foot Cat 5e cable from, I think, the Obama administration.
The flat one or the round one?
I don't remember buying it. I don't remember what it was for. It might have spawned there.
That's the cable graveyard phenomenon. Everyone who builds a home network accumulates this tangle of cables and links that are almost right, but never quite. You've got the 25-footer coiled behind the desk because the 10-footer was 6 inches too short. You've got the 50-footer you bought for a temporary run 3 apartments ago that you're keeping just in case. And they take up space in this dense, unmanageable knot that defies all attempts at organization.
It's the drawer equivalent of a haunted house.
It really is. And what the prompt is describing is the liberation from all of that. Instead of owning 20 cables and fixed links that never quite match what you need, you own one spool of bulk cable and you cut exactly what you need every single time. It's the cable equivalent of buying lumber by the board foot instead of buying pre-cut boards and hoping they fit.
Which is a framing I genuinely hadn't considered. And it's exactly right. You stop being a cable collector and start being a cable fabricator.
Here's the thing. The prompt mentions the user has already crimped cables before, so we're not doing crimping 101 here. This is purely about the logistics, the sourcing, and the economics. Where do you buy a reel? What sizes do they come in? Why is fiber not part of this conversation? And most importantly, is it actually worth it for a renter in an apartment?
Let's start with the single biggest question. Where do you actually buy a reel of this stuff? Because it's not like Home Depot has a big spool aisle next to the paint.
Right, and that's actually the first misconception to bust. Bulk Ethernet cable is not a retail home improvement item in the way that extension cords are. You're not going to find it at your neighborhood hardware store in most cases. But it's also not some industrial trade secret. You just need to know where to look.
Walk me through the sources.
There are basically 4 tiers. Tier 1 is monoprice. If you've been in the networking or home theater space for any amount of time, you know monoprice. They're the direct-to-consumer darling of the cable world. No branding markup, no retail middleman, just solid products at prices that make you wonder how anyone else stays in business.
The IKEA of copper.
That's not unfair. Their Cat 6 bulk cable, specifically model 821, is 250 feet of solid bare copper, 23-gauge CMR riser rated, and as of right now, it's $49.99. For 250 feet. That's the sweet spot for an apartment, and we'll talk about why in a minute. Tier 2 is Amazon, but you have to know what brands to trust. Cable Matters and True Cable are the two names that consistently come up as reliable for pure copper bolt cable. Cable Matters sells a 500-foot spool of Cat 6 for around $85 to $90. True Cable's Cat 6 of 500-foot box runs about $129. Both are solid copper, not copper-clad aluminum, and both have consistent quality control.
Let's flag that copper-clad aluminum thing right now because I know you have feelings.
I have very strong feelings. Copper-clad aluminum, or CCA, is the gas station sushi of networking cable. It looks like the real thing, it's cheaper, and you will regret every life choice that led you to it. CCA is aluminum wire with a thin copper coating. It has about 35% higher resistance than pure copper. It's brittle, it snaps when you try to terminate it. And the real killer is that it fails power over Ethernet at distances over about 30 meters. So if you're running a PoE access point or a security camera, your cable is now a liability. Do not buy CCA. If the listing doesn't explicitly say solid bare copper, assume it's CCA and walk away.
The gas station sushi of networking cable. I'm going to remember that. What's Tier 3?
Tier 3 is the electrical supply houses. Graybar, Annixter, Platt, those kinds of places. These are where professional installers buy their materials. They stock everything from Cat5e to Cat8, plus all the termination hardware, wall plates, keystone jacks, everything. The catch is that they're oriented toward contractors with accounts, so pricing isn't always transparent online and you might need to call or visit a branch. But if you want a 1,000-foot box of Belden or Comscope cable, the stuff that goes into commercial buildings, this is where you go.
For a renter in an apartment, that's probably overkill.
A 1,000-foot box is what you buy when you're wiring a 4-bedroom house with 2 floors and a basement. For an apartment, you'd be using maybe a quarter of it and storing the rest for years.
Which brings us to Tier 4.
Tier 4 is the dedicated cable retailers. Infinite Cables, Show Me Cables, FS. These are smaller operations that specialize in exactly this kind of thing. Infinite Cables in particular is great if you want custom links pre-terminated, but they also sell bulk reels and their prices are competitive. Show Me Cables has a huge selection of colors, which sounds trivial, but if you're running multiple cables to a media center and you want to color code by function, it's useful.
The sourcing landscape is monoprice for the best price-to-quality ratio. Amazon for convenience if you stick to Cable Matters or True Cable. Electrical supply houses for pro-grade materials. And specialty retailers for selection. That's actually more options than I expected. Now, what about the spool sizes? Because the prompt specifically asked about that.
Bulk Ethernet typically comes in 4 standard sizes. You've got 100-foot boxes, which are basically a sample size, good for a single long run or a handful of shorter ones, but not economical. Then 250 feet, which is about 75 meters. That's the sweet spot for an apartment. A typical 2-bedroom apartment with runs from a living room router to 2 bedrooms and maybe an office nook will use somewhere between 150 and 200 feet of cable when you factor in following baseboards and leaving slack. 500 feet, roughly 150 meters, and 1,000 feet, which is the standard 305-meter box. The 1,000-foot box is the industry standard for professional installers. It's what you buy when you're wiring a whole house or a small office. It's also about the size of a large shoebox and weighs around 20 pounds. For an apartment, it's just too much cable unless you're planning to share with friends or you have unusually long runs.
The 1,000-foot box is the one where the cost per foot really drops, right?
It does, but you have to actually use the cable for those savings to be real. A 1,000-foot box of monoprice Cat Ticks is about $110, which works out to 11 cents per foot. The 250-foot box is $49.99. That's 20 cents per foot. So yes, the 1,000-foot box is almost half the price per foot. But if you only use 200 feet of it, you've spent $110 to save yourself $40 worth of cable, and now you have 800 feet of bulk cable living in your closet for the next decade.
The cable graveyard just got a bigger tombstone.
The economic analysis has to account for what you actually use, not just the unit price. And that's the perfect segue into the cost comparison, because this is where the numbers get really satisfying.
All right, let's do it. Walk me through the math.
The baseline scenario, you're moving into a new apartment and you need to run Ethernet from wherever your router lives to, let's say, 2 bedrooms and a living room media center. 3 runs, average length, maybe 18 feet each. That's 54 feet of cable, but let's round up to 60 for slack and routing around door frames. You also want a few patch cables for connecting devices to the wall jacks, maybe 5 cables at 6 feet each, so another 30 feet. Total cable needed, roughly 90 feet, but you're buying a 250-foot box because that's the smallest practical size that gives you room for error and future changes.
The upfront purchase is a $49 box of monoprice Cat 6, plus tools.
Now compare that to buying pre-made cables. A 10-pack of 10-foot Cat Ticks patch cables on Amazon from a decent brand runs about $25. That's 100 feet of cable for $25. To match 250 feet, you'd need 2.5 of those packs. So 100 feet plus 100 feet plus 50 feet. But you can't buy a 50-foot equivalent in 10-foot increments, so realistically you're buying 3 packs for $75, or you're mixing lengths and paying more per foot for shorter cables. Either way, you're at around $60 to $75 for 250 feet of pre-made cable.
The bulk box is already cheaper, even before you factor in the waste.
The waste is the real story here. With pre-made cables, you're buying fixed lengths that almost never match what you need. If your run is 18 feet, you're buying a 25-foot cable and coiling 7 feet of it somewhere. If your run is 12 feet, you're buying a 15-foot cable and you've got 3 feet of slack. Over 3 or 4 runs, you've got 15 to 20 feet of excess cable that's just coiled behind furniture, taking up space, collecting dust, and silently judging you.
The silent judgment is the worst part.
With bulk cable, you cut exactly 18 feet, or 20 if you want 2 feet of service slack at each end, which is good practice. Every inch of cable in that box gets used for its intended purpose. There is no waste. There is no coil of shame behind the desk.
The tool cost.
This is the part that scares people off, but it shouldn't. A decent RJ45 crimper, and I'm talking about the pass-through style, which is a complete game changer, runs $15 to $30. Pass-through connectors are about 30 cents each. A basic cable tester is $10 to $20. If you're doing Keystone Jacks at the wall plates, a punch-down tool is another $10 to $15, though many Keystone Jacks now come with tool, less designs that you can terminate with just a pair of scissors or a small flathead screwdriver.
All in on tools, we're talking maybe $60 to $80 for everything.
That's a one-time purchase. The tools last for years. My crimper is, I think, 7 years old at this point, and it's still going strong. The first 3 or 4 cable runs you make versus buying pre-made, you've recouped the entire tool investment. After that, every cable you make is pure savings.
Let's put a real number on that. 3 18-foot runs and 5 6-foot patch cables. What does that cost me in bulk versus pre-made?
In bulk, 84 feet of cable from your 250-foot box. At 20 cents per foot, that's $16.80 worth of cable. Add 8 connectors at 30 cents each, $2.40. If you're using Keystone Jacks at the wall, those are about $2 each for 6 of them, so $12. Total material cost, roughly $31. 3 25-foot cables at roughly $9 each, $27. 5 6-foot patch cables at about $4 each, $20, total $47. And you've got 21 feet of excess coiled up behind your furniture.
I'm saving $16 on my first project, and I've got tools that will pay for themselves on the next one. That math is hard to argue with.
That's the small apartment scenario. If you're wiring a larger space, or you're the kind of person who reconfigures their setup every year or two, the savings compound quickly.
Okay, so we've covered sourcing and economics, but the prompt also asked about fiber, and I think we need to address that head-on because it's a really good question. If you're going to the trouble of running your own cable, why not run fiber and get that sweet, sweet light-speed data?
I love this question because it reveals a fundamental misunderstanding about what fiber actually is and how it works. Ethernet over copper is electricity over metal. You cut the cable, you crimp a connector onto the end. The electrical connection is made mechanically. It's simple, it's robust, and it's been refined to the point where a complete novice can do it in under 2 minutes after 3 practice tries. Fiber is glass. The core of a fiber optic cable is a strand of glass about the diameter of a human hair. 9 microns for single mode, 50 or 62.5 microns for multi-mode. When you cut that glass, the end face has to be absolutely perfect. We're talking about surface irregularities measured in nanometers. If there's a scratch, a chip, or even a microscopic bit of dust, the light scatters and your signal degrades or fails entirely.
You can't just crimp an RJ45 onto the end and call it a day.
Fiber termination requires one of 3 methods. Option 1 is epoxy and polish. You strip the cable, inject epoxy into a connector, insert the fiber, let it cure, then cleave the excess and polish the end face on a series of lapping films from coarse to fine. It takes about 15 minutes per connector and requires a steady hand and a clean workspace. Option 2 is mechanical splice connectors, which use a pre-polished fiber stub inside the connector and index matching gel to couple the light. These are faster, maybe 5 minutes per connector, but they're less reliable and still require a precision cleaver that costs several hundred dollars. You use a machine that aligns two fiber ends with microscopic precision and then arcs an electrical discharge between them to literally melt the glass together. The splice loss is near zero. It's incredibly reliable, and the machines start at $1,500 and go up to $10,000. This is what telecom installers use. It is not a renter's tool.
The barrier to DIY fiber isn't skill. It's capital equipment. You need a $1,000 tool to do what a $30 crimper does for copper.
That's why the prompt's instinct is exactly right. Bulk fiber on a spool exists. You can buy a 1,000-foot reel of single-mode fiber for a couple hundred dollars, but you cannot terminate it yourself without specialized equipment. The only practical way to use fiber in a home network is to buy pre-terminated patch cables in fixed lengths. If you need a 30-foot run from your router to your office, you buy a 30-foot LC2LC single-mode patch cable for about $15 to $20, and you're done.
Which brings you right back to the original problem. You're buying fixed lengths, you've got excess to manage, and you're paying a premium for the pre-terminated ends.
Unless you have a specific need for fiber, like electrical isolation between buildings, or running a backbone longer than 100 meters, or you're doing 10 gigabit networking at distances where copper would struggle, fiber is solving a problem you probably don't have. For a renter in an apartment, Cat 6 or Cat 6a will handle anything you throw at it.
Let's talk about that for a second, because there's a related misconception that I see everywhere. People think Cat 6 is obsolete and you need Cat 8 for future-proofing.
This drives me absolutely up the wall. It's a real standard. It supports 25 and 40 gigabit Ethernet up to 30 meters. It's designed for data centers where you're connecting servers to top-of-rack switches over short distances. It uses shielded connectors, it's thick and stiff and miserable to work with, and terminating it properly requires grounding the shield at both ends. For a home network, it is the definition of overkill.
What should people actually buy?
Cat 6a is the practical ceiling for residential. Cat 6a supports 10 gigabit Ethernet up to 100 meters, that's 328 feet, which is the full length of the Ethernet specification. Your longest run in an apartment is maybe 50 or 60 feet. You could run 10 gigabit over Cat 6a for the next decade and never hit its limit. Even regular Cat ticks will do 10 gigabit up to 55 meters, which covers essentially any apartment run.
Motherboards are just now getting 2.5 gigabit Ethernet as standard.
2.5 gigabit is becoming the baseline on mid-range and higher motherboards. 10 gigabit is still a premium feature. By the time 10 gigabit is standard in consumer gear, which is probably 5 to 7 years away, Cat 6a will still be more than sufficient. Cat 8 is a solution to a problem that residential users don't have.
The cable itself is future-proofed. What about the termination? Are we going to look back in 5 years and realize we should have used a different connector?
RJ45 has been the standard for Ethernet since the 80s. It's not going anywhere. The physical connector is the same whether you're running 10 megabit or 10 gigabit. What changes is the cable category and the quality of the termination. A well-terminated Cat 6a cable with proper twist maintenance, keeping the pairs twisted as close to the connector as possible, will handle anything the standard can throw at it.
That's the thing where you don't untwist more than half an inch of the pairs before they go into the connector.
The twisting is what cancels out electromagnetic interference. When you untwist too much, you create a section of cable that's vulnerable to crosstalk, and at higher speeds that can cause packet loss or negotiation down to a lower speed. With pass-through connectors, it's actually easier to maintain the twist because you're feeding the wires through the connector and trimming the excess after crimping.
Let's talk about pass-through connectors for a second, because I think they're the single biggest reason this is now accessible to normal humans.
They really are. Traditional RJ45 connectors require you to cut all 8 wires to exactly the same length, insert them into the connector in the right order, and hope they all seat properly before you crimp. If one wire is a millimeter short, it doesn't make contact and the cable fails. With pass-through connectors, the wires go all the way through the front of the connector and stick out the other side. You can see that they're in the right order, you can verify they've all seated, and then when you crimp, the tool trims the excess flush with the front of the connector. It's essentially foolproof.
I've watched someone terminate their first cable with pass-through connectors, and it took them maybe 90 seconds. They looked at me and said, "That's it?"
That's the magic of good tooling. The barrier to entry used to be real. You'd waste 3 or 4 connectors getting the hang of it, and even then you'd have cables that tested fine, but wouldn't negotiate at full speed. pass-through connectors, and the matching crimper eliminate most of those failure modes.
Now, the prompt mentions flat cables specifically, and I want to address that because there's a reason. Bulk cable for permanent runs is round.
Flat cables are patch cables. They're designed to be flexible and discrete, running under a rug, along a baseboard, behind a desk. They achieve that flatness by laying the twisted pairs side by side rather than in a circular bundle. The problem is that this geometry compromises the twist rate and the separation between pairs, which increases crosstalk. For short patch runs of a few feet, it's fine. For a permanent in-wall or a long baseboard run of 15 or 20 feet, you want round cable with proper pair separation and a spline, that plastic cross-shaped divider inside the cable that keeps the pairs physically separated.
The spline is the unsung hero of Cat 6.
It really is. It's a piece of plastic that does nothing except maintain geometry, and it's the reason Cat 6 can hit its rated speeds. Flat cables don't have a spline because they can't. The geometry doesn't allow it.
The move is, solid copper round Cat 6 or Cat 6A for your permanent runs, terminated to keystone jacks at the wall, and then short pre-made or self-made stranded patch cables from the wall to your devices.
That distinction between solid and stranded is important. Solid copper is for permanent runs. It holds its shape, it's less flexible, and it's designed to be punched down to keystone jacks or terminated to RJ45 connectors rated for solid wire. Stranded cable is for patch cables. It's flexible. It can be bent and moved repeatedly without breaking, and it uses connectors designed for stranded wire. If you use a solid rated connector on stranded cable, the contacts might not bite properly. If you use a stranded rated connector on solid cable, the contacts can actually cut through the conductor.
You match the connector to the wire type. Is that something people actually mess up?
All the time. And then they wonder why their cable tests fine for continuity, but won't negotiate above 100 megabits. It's one of those things that's obvious once you know it, but nobody tells you when you're starting out.
Alright, let's shift gears to something the prompt didn't explicitly ask, but I think is the hidden value proposition here. The storage and organization benefit. You mentioned the 1,000-foot box is the size of a shoebox. What about the 250-foot box?
The monoprice 250-foot box is about 8 inches by 8 inches by 4 inches. It's roughly the footprint of a hardcover book. It sits on a shelf. It does not tangle. It does not spawn offspring. You open the box, you pull out exactly what you need, you close the box, you put it back.
Versus the alternative, which is a drawer full of cables in various lengths, each one wrapped in its own personal grudge.
I did an inventory of my own cable drawer before we recorded this, just to see. I had 4 6-foot cables, 2 10-foot cables, 1 14-footer, 1 25-footer, a 50-footer that I'm pretty sure predates my marriage, and a 3-foot cable that had been coiled so tightly for so long that it now holds the shape of a cinnamon roll even when unplugged.
The cinnamon roll cable. I know exactly the one.
All of that. All of it. Represents maybe 150 feet of cable. That's a single 250-foot box with room to spare. And every single one of those cables was the wrong length for something at some point, which is why they all ended up in the drawer instead of in use.
This is the mental shift I think the prompt is really getting at. It's not just about saving money, it's about treating cable like a material rather than a product. You don't buy pre-cut lumber for every project. You buy boards and you cut them to length. You don't buy pre-cut fabric for every sewing project. You buy yards off the bolt. Cable should be the same.
The renter angle makes this even more compelling. When you move apartments, your cable runs change. The 18-foot run from the living room to the office in your old place becomes a 12-foot run in the new place or a 22-foot run. If you've got pre-made cables, you're either making do with the wrong lengths or buying new ones. With a reel, you walk through the new apartment, measure your runs, cut new cables, and you're done. The reel comes with you and adapts to whatever floor plan you're dealing with.
You're basically buying adaptability.
You're buying the ability to never think about cable lengths again. That's the real value proposition. The cost savings are real and they're significant, but the psychological benefit of opening a box, cutting exactly what you need, and never having a coil of excess behind your furniture, that's the thing that actually changes your relationship with your home network.
There's a phrase that's been rattling around in my head this whole conversation, and I think it's the thesis here. Treat cable like lumber.
Buy it by the board foot, cut to fit, stop hoarding just-in-case links.
And that brings us to the practical question. If someone's sold on this idea, what do they actually do this weekend?
Step 1. Measure. Before you buy anything, walk through your new apartment, or your current one if you're not moving, and trace the paths your cables will take. Don't measure point to point as the crow flies. Follow the baseboards, go around door frames, account for vertical runs if you're going up and over. String is useful here. Lay it along the path, then measure the string. Then add 20% for slack, termination, and the fact that you will make at least one mistake on your first crimp.
What's a realistic total for a two-bedroom apartment?
Living room router to bedroom 1, probably 15 to 20 feet. Router to bedroom 2, maybe 20 to 25 feet if it's on the opposite side of the apartment. Router to a living room media center or office nook, 10 to 15 feet. Add a couple of patch cables at 6 feet each. Total cable needed, somewhere around 80 to 100 feet. A 250-foot box gives you plenty of headroom for mistakes and future reconfigurations.
Step 2. Buy the box and the tools.
Monoprice 2.5-foot, 50-foot Cat-Tick solid copper, model 8121, $49.99. A pass-through crimper kit that includes connectors. You can find these on Amazon for $20 to $30, and they usually come with a dozen or two connectors and a basic tester. Keystone jacks if you're doing wall plates. Figure 6 to 8 of those at a couple dollars each. Wall plates themselves are a dollar or two. Total investment, $80 to $100 for everything.
Step 3. Terminate everything cleanly.
For the permanent runs, terminate to keystone jacks at the wall. This keeps the in wall or along baseboard portion clean and professional. Then use short pre-made or self-made stranded patch cables from the wall jack to your actual devices. The stranded cables are flexible and can be moved around without stressing the solid core permanent runs.
Why keystone jacks instead of just crimping an RJ45 on the end and plugging directly into the device?
First, solid core cable doesn't like being flexed repeatedly. If you plug a solid core cable directly into a laptop and you unplug and replug it every day, eventually those solid conductors will work harden and break. Second, wall jacks give you a clean termination point that doesn't move. The cable from the wall to the device is a consumable. It gets stepped on, yanked, tangled, replaced. The cable in the wall is infrastructure. You want a clear boundary between the two.
That's a distinction I don't think most people make. The patch cable is a consumable. The run is infrastructure.
When you treat them differently, your network becomes more reliable and easier to troubleshoot. If a device stops connecting, you swap the patch cable. If the problem persists, you test the run. You're not ripping out in-wall cable because a connector got stepped on.
Let me ask you a question that I think a lot of renters will have. Is this actually allowed? You're running cable along baseboards, maybe tacking it in place. Are landlords going to have a problem with this?
It depends on how you do it. If you're stapling cable to the baseboards and leaving holes, yes, that's going to be an issue. But there are adhesive cable clips that stick to baseboards and walls and remove cleanly. 3M. Command makes versions specifically for cable management. You can also run cable under the edge of carpet, behind floor trim, or through cable raceways that sit on the surface without any permanent attachment. The key is to make it reversible.
You're not drilling holes in the wall and fishing cable through.
Most renters aren't, no. And honestly, for an apartment, surface mount cable raceway looks clean and professional if you take your time installing it. It's a plastic channel with an adhesive back that you can paint to match the wall. Nobody's going to notice it except other nerds, and they'll be impressed.
The highest compliment, being noticed only by the people who matter.
Corn. All right, I want to circle back to something we touched on earlier because I think it deserves more attention. The pass-through connector revolution. When did these become mainstream, and why did it take so long? Pass-through connectors have been around for at least 15 years in the professional space, but they only really hit the consumer market in a big way maybe 5 or 6 years ago. The reason they took so long is that they require a matching crimper with a blade that trims the excess wire. Traditional crimpers don't have that blade, so you couldn't just buy pass-through connectors and use them with your existing tool. It was a system change.
There was a chicken and egg problem. Nobody bought the connectors because they didn't have the crimper, and nobody bought the crimper because they already had a crimper.
The kit solved that. Once companies started bundling the pass-through crimper with a starter set of connectors and a tester, the value proposition became clear. You're paying $25 for a tool that makes termination nearly foolproof, versus struggling with a $15 traditional crimper and wasting connectors on failed terminations.
I want to hit one more misconception before we wrap up the core discussion. There's a belief that making your own cables means sacrificing reliability. That a machine-terminated factory cable is inherently more reliable than something you crimped at your desk.
This is one of those things that's true in theory and false in practice. Yes, a factory-terminated cable from a reputable manufacturer is tested and certified to meet spec. But a cable you terminated yourself, tested with a basic continuity tester, and verified at full-link speed is just as reliable in practice. And the failure mode is different. When a factory cable fails, you throw it away and buy another one. When a self-terminated cable fails, you cut off the connector and crimp a new one in 2 minutes.
The reliability is actually higher in a practical sense because the cost of repair is near zero.
You learn what a good termination looks like. After you've done 10 or 20 of these, you can tell by feel whether the crimp was solid. The tester confirms it, but you already know.
There's a craft element here that I think gets overlooked. Making your own cables isn't just about saving money or getting exact lengths. It's about understanding your network at a physical level. You know where every cable goes, how it's terminated, and what to do if something stops working.
That knowledge compounds. The first time you troubleshoot a network problem and you can eliminate the physical layer in 30 seconds because you built it yourself and you know it's solid. That's an empowering moment.
Okay, so you're sold on the idea. Here's exactly what to do this weekend. I want to lay it out as clearly as possible.
Step 1. Measure your new apartment's wall paths. Use string if you have to. Trace the actual routes the cables will take, not the straight line distance. Add 20% for slack and mistakes. Write down the lengths for each run.
Step 2. Buy a 250-foot box of solid bare copper Cat 6 from Monoprice or True Cable. Do not buy CCA. If the listing doesn't say solid bare copper explicitly, move on. Get a pass-through crimper kit that includes connectors and a basic tester. If you're doing wall jacks, get keystone jacks and wall plates. Total investment should be around $80 to $100.
Step 3. Terminate the permanent runs to keystone jacks at the wall plates. Use solid core cable for these runs. Then make or buy short-stranded patch cables for the final connection from the wall to your devices. This keeps your infrastructure clean and your consumables replaceable.
The mental shift. Stop thinking of cable as a product you buy in fixed lengths and start thinking of it as a material you cut to fit. The box on your shelf replaces the drawer full of cables that are never quite the right length.
The upfront tool cost gets recouped on your first 3 or 4 cable runs versus buying pre-made. After that, you're saving money on every cable you make, and you never have to store a 50-foot cable for a 20-foot run again.
One open question before we close. With Wi-Fi 7 rolling out and mesh systems getting better every year, are wired runs eventually going to become obsolete for renters?
I don't think so, and here's why. Wireless keeps getting faster, but it also keeps getting more crowded. Every apartment building has dozens of Wi-Fi networks competing for the same spectrum. Your latency-sensitive applications, gaming, video calls, anything real-time, they still benefit from a wired connection that doesn't have to contend with your neighbor's Netflix stream. And if you're running a NAS or doing large file transfers, wired is still an order of magnitude more consistent than even the best Wi-Fi.
Wireless is for convenience. Wired is for when it matters.
The two complement each other. Your phone and your laptop move around. They're on Wi-Fi. Your desktop, your game console, your NASA, those stay put, and they benefit from a wire. As 2.5 gigabit Ethernet becomes standard on motherboards, having Cat 6a in the walls means you're ready for it without changing anything.
The reel you buy today is good for a decade.
Cat 6a handles 10 gigabit at full distance. By the time residential networking exceeds that, we'll be in a completely different world.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The nudibranch species, Chromodorus lochi, found in the waters around Lake Tanganyika's outflow basin, produces a defensive compound called latrunculin A that was first measured in 1928 at roughly 0.3 milligrams per specimen. Modern HPLC analysis shows the actual yield is closer to 2.1 milligrams, meaning early interwar chemists underestimated nudibranch chemical potency by a factor of 7.
Lake Tanganyika doesn't have an outflow to the ocean.
It does not.
That nudibranch is either very lost or Hilbert's fact-checker is on vacation. This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for making this show possible. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love a review wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show. Find us at myweirdprompts.com for every episode, show notes, and links to everything we mentioned today. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Go make some cables.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.